welcome to episode 142 of Ribbon of Memes. It's an auspicious one because this is our third anniversary of the podcast. So, I'm Nick, and I'm joined as ever by my comrade in watchery, Roger.
Oh.
And this episode, we are having another retrospective, just a check-in on where we've been and what we've done and what we're thinking of. We've done some number crunching for this one, so we've been looking at all the films we've watched to see if there was any interesting trends that came out of it.
And, well, we can confirm, first of all, that we have indeed done more John Carpenter films than for any other director.
That's right. He's closely followed by... How many John Carpenter have we done?
I haven't actually... Seven.
Seven, goodness
six,
me.
Six for Spielberg.
Yes, we are slowly working our way. I don't think we've got any plans on stopping with John Carpenter. I suspect we will work our way through his oeuvre. Others that are close to us, we've watched quite a few George Miller. In fact, a lot of them where we did a whole group of the same film leads to a sort of an overrepresentation of those directors, which is why we got the Wachowski siblings up there, as we did four of those.
But we have had five John McTiernan films.
Interesting. I did not think we'd done that many. Oh, yeah, 13th Warrior. we have not watched nearly enough Billy Wilder films, but we will rectify that. We've got three Hitchcock films on there because we did three in a row. Otherwise, we've been pretty diverse. A few James Cameron, two, three.
Yeah, I mean, we get somebody like Robert Zemeckis because of Back to Future. We get John Lasseter because of Toy Story.
Yes, which don't quite count, but they're up there. But James Carpenter, John Carpenter, sorry, I'm conflating them. John Carpenter is our most watched director, and probably will continue to be until we run out of John Carpenter films, I suspect.
He's still alive, damn it, we can hope.
he's retired again. We have watched, of the films we've watched, and we have watched 187, I think, according to my little tick box here. Total films, 187, of which we both agreed 47% of them were masterpieces. is that generous of us? I suppose we're going into films that were supposed to be masterpieces.
Well, there's some exceptions that we knew pretty much nobody was going to think it was a masterpiece, including us. But it's fun anyway. But yeah,
Ghosts of Mars would be our classic version of that.
But I mean, I think we start off with I'm recalling the original brief of who wrote the book, but have you seen anyway, David Thompson.
Yes. So the original idea was, yes, these are masterpieces. My original idea was, these are films that I want to see because they're supposed to be masterpieces. Am I missing out?
I suspect we both tend to drift into crowd pleasers, or at least crowd pleasers of the sort that please us.
We're filmic children of the 80s, I guess, and tend to gravitate to that sort of...
You had some percentage masterpiece by decade, didn't you?
I did. By decade, yes, because I was interested to see whether we preferred a particular decade or not. Our most watched decade, can you guess?
Well, it could be 80s, I would think.
It was. We've watched 38 films from the 80s. Our least watched decade is the 20s with three.
1920s or 2020s?
1920s. 2020s, we'd watched seven. Which is disappointing. But that slightly skews the results because our most masterpiece by decade is the 1920s. That was 100%. We watched three films. We thought all three of them were masterpieces.
But there were many, many, many thousands of films produced in the 1920s which have been deservedly forgotten. And, we're not going to seek them out to watch them now.
Any film you can watch and remember 100 years later, are going to be the ones that are remembered 100 years later. So that's going to skew our results a little bit. So discounting the 20s, if we can, our second highest masterpiece percentage would be the 30s. But we've only watched four films from the 30s. So maybe discount those two. After that, the 40s. And there is a general trend of declining masterpieces throughout that. Basically, we go from 70% of the films we watched in the 40s down to 28% in the 2020s.
And being fair, again, I think there is that general effect of if a film has a good reputation and is a bit of trouble to find, we're more likely to seek it out.
Yes, we're not going to watch the crap film.
Things from the 80s onwards, we also have the "I remember this, I quite liked it" factor.
The Ghost of Mars factor of "this is a fun film, I really enjoy it."
And maybe it doesn't stand up as well as when I first watched it when I was 15.
Exactly. But there is a steady, all of that aside, I think what we can read into this is there has been a steady decline of quality of films from 1920 onwards.
And only 100%. We, our expensive consulting company, has the solution to this.
Yes, we can tell you exactly what the problem is.
The solution, of course, is make your films in the 1920s when everything is much cheaper.
Yes, and make sure they're remembered 100 years later.
Yes. Yeah.
But what, you're giving away our tips now. It's the end of our consulting fee. 80s is our most watched decade by far with 38 films, followed by the 1990s and the 2000s, both with 31 films, the 2010s with 30, and then all the others are more or less in single digits.
And we've talked before about our film watching history, but I think for me, 80s and 90s is pretty much when I saw a lot of first run films.
Yes, absolutely. I was, as I've mentioned before, I was a student in the 90s. They did a cheap cinema night every Sunday. So every Sunday we go to the cinema. And the only time in my life I've done that kind of, we're going to the cinema, not to see a specific film, we'll get there and see what's on. And that was, and the standout film from all of that, honestly, was Saving Private Ryan, because just wasn't I expecting to have that thrown in my face. The opening sequence is just incredible.
Funny, everybody always talks about the opening sequence. Nobody ever talks about the rest of the film.
The rest of the film is not as terrible as thought of. It's good. It's just you're still stunned from the opening, honestly. We have, interestingly, several half masterpieces, not many. Can you guess? There's one I think was classically half a masterpiece for us.
I suspect it would be Stand By Me, which I frankly never want to see again.
No, I think you just didn't call that a masterpiece. Our half masterpiece that we allowed was Full Metal Jacket, which is half of a very good film and half of a boring one. And we both agreed that was...
If they just had either a completely different second half or made the first half the whole film, I think it would have been a lot better.
It would have been, yeah, the second half just doesn't really work. So there were a few others that were half masterpieces, but that was the classic one. Magnolia, we both said, was half a masterpiece. Children of Men, we both said, was half a masterpiece. But after that, we've been pretty strict.
Both with Julianne Moore, I notice.
Yes, we don't see enough of Julianne Moore, I would say. Mm. But there we are. As far as I've broke this down into genre as well, interestingly, to see... what was our most watched genre? It's a bit subjective, of course, because there's kind of an uber genre of drama, thriller, adventure, satire and documentary, of which we have watched way more drama than anything else. But just about anything fits into drama.
Drama is pretty much my default categorization. When it's not a thriller, it's not crime, it's not action.
Yeah. Then if there's no drama, then it's not really anything, is it?
It's not horror, etc.
Yes. Well, so I had that uber category, and then I broke it down a bit more, because you can have action drama and horror drama and crime drama. So I broke it down into things like animated, historical drama, horror, action. Can you guess what our most watched genre was?
Do you count science fiction as one of those?
I did count science fiction as one of those, and you're correct. That is our most watched genre. 52 films we've watched. That's nearly a quarter of all the films we've watched. Of which we thought about half were masterpieces. That's not bad.
It's certainly a genre where, spiritually speaking, I live a lot of the time. So
yes, we may skew a bit upwards of that, but yes, we like our science fiction, A Ribbon of Memes. After that is the broader category of action. We watched 30 action films, by which I guess I mean Raiders of the Lost Ark. Well, let's give you some idea of what I called action. Some of these were double tagged, though, like The Matrix I called SF action.
Mm. Well, yes, I mean, those different uses of the concept of genre. So.
Yes, yeah. Ghost of Mars was SF action horror. Zero Hour was action thriller. Raiders of the Lost Ark was action. So action made it in quite a lot. We have watched 30 films that I've tagged with action, though there is some crossover, of which exactly half, 15, we thought were masterpieces.
Yeah, you know, another thing I pulled off your stats was Oscar nominations.
Oh, yes.
And
I was interested to see if there was any overlap between what we thought were masterpieces and Oscar nominations and Oscar winning.
I would have to say not much. I mean, looking at the Oscar noms, the one that got most was Roma at 15. And I can see this as a film that would please the Academy, but it didn't super please me.
I think it's one of my least favourite films on the list. That's mean because it's well made, but yeah. That's our highest Oscar nominated film, is it?
Yeah, I don't remember whether it won any. It certainly didn't win many, but it got a lot of nominations.
15 noms. It won 3.
Right.
As far as I can see.
Yeah, my cutoff on this list was 4. The English Patient is up there, and that's our highest winner with 9 awards.
9 wins. Yeah, again, we didn't love it.
I start to look at this and think, what does it take to make an Academy winner, which is not necessarily what makes either a commercially successful film or a film that we like. Because, you know, we get The English Patient, which is drama with British accents. And unhappy love affairs and all that sort of thing. We get Schindler's List, which is clearly worthy. I mean, it's good as well, but it's worthy.
Yes.
We get Gravity, which is that rare occasion when the Academy says, well, all right, I mean, we regard this science fiction as Buck Rogers stuff for the kiddies, but this will let through because it's a guy we like, and it doesn't have people going zap kaboom.
Yeah, it's not proper science fiction, is it? Yeah.
Yes, I will notice that Birdman is in this list as well, which is similarly, you know, we know superhero films are popular. We can't deign to let one of those actually win anything, but here is a thing that is called a superhero film, but it's all very arsey, so that will be fine.
Yeah, these are all, yes, exactly, it doesn't count. So these are all double digit nominations. Lawrence of Arabia is in there with 10 noms. It won 7. So that's one of our highest. I think it's fair to say all of these films are ones that we thought were okay.
The Hurt Locker, I can't remember now what I said, but in retrospect I remember it fondly, and that's...
I'm pretty sure we liked The Hurt Locker.
That's 6 wins.
And there are a few here. Fury Road, Mad Max Fury Road, got 10 nominations, which we both thoroughly enjoyed. And we've heard very good things about Furiosa, the recently released one. Sadly, it's crashed and burned, which is probably going to end any more Mad Max films, but I would really like to see Furiosa.
Oh, they'll probably just blame it on it being female-led again, same as they always do.
Yeah, probably. But I'd very much like to see it anyway. Chinatown got 11 noms.
And Sunset Boulevard.
Sunset Boulevard, I will hear no bad things about. Billy Wilder, very good. Citizen Kane got 9 noms, which we, I love, you appreciated.
I'm not going to say it was unfairly taking those nominations away from other films or anything like that, so.
Fair, that's fair.
Unforgiven, I suspect, was boosted in the nominations by it's Clint Eastwood coming back to acting as a more thoughtful character.
Yeah, and we liked
was
it.
Was it his first direction? I can't remember now.
No, I think he'd done Play Misty for Me or something. Yeah. It wasn't his first, but it might have been his first Western, so it was relevant.
Certainly he comes back to Western after a break, and it's being revisionist and so on. So I think that probably helped. Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, like, don't love.
The pretty boys and girls of Hollywood of that era, and people get up in arms about how violent it is.
Yeah, it feels in retrospect quite formulaic of that era, even though it was one of the setters of that era, so it's a bit unfair, but it's the classic. This isn't going to have a happy ending, is it?
Well, I mean, as we talked most recently about Lawrence of Arabia, that it is so much the template that everything else copied. That it starts to look clichéd simply because of that, which is not its fault.
No, it was so influential that it feels influenced by everything that came afterwards.
Another thing I did, I'm going to have a little rant here.
Very good.
The IMDb, Internet Movie Database, very useful site. It originally started based on user contributions. In fact, given that this was the early 90s, it started based on a list called Those Eyes of the Most Beautiful Actresses. But it turned into something useful after that. The point is, when Amazon bought it...
Facebook, except it turned into something useful.
Yeah. I think it was 97 or so when Amazon bought it. They promised that the data, which had been, after all, contributed by users, would remain fully downloadable forever. This has not been the case since 2017, and nobody apparently cares. You can download some of the data, but you can get, you know, the director, the year of the film, the big stars in it. What you can't get anymore is the complete cast list for a film. It's on the website, but you can't bulk download it and run local data modelling over it, which is what I was doing.
Yes, which is what we were hoping to do with some of this stuff.
However, what I have done is run the set of films we've looked at through the principals and see who has turned up most often as a repeat offender.
Ah,
so this will not pick up people like Bill Paxton, who's been in a bunch of stuff but not in lead roles.
Ah, I'd really like to know that kind of stuff, but yeah. Okay.
But talked about some people already, but Schwarzenegger is our most prolific actor with 6 films.
Oh, okay. Right too.
There's two Terminators, Commando, Predator, Running Man, and Last Action Hero.
Yes, that was, I mean, to be fair, we did have a bit of a Schwarzenegger season. So,
yep, which accounts for half of those. Spielberg, of course, talked about. Joel Silver turns up as a producer in two separate lumps, really. You have Commando, Predator, and Die Hard on the one hand.
Yes.
And the first 3 Matrix on the other, about 10 years later. So.
Oh, interesting.
Our most prolific writer is H.P. Lovecraft.
We have done 2 H.P. Lovecraft-a-thons.
Mm-hmm.
Though he was that's based upon a story by rather than screenplay by, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Including 2 Colors Out of Space. Tom Hanks shows up largely because of 4 Toy Stories plus Apollo 13.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't have thought we would. I don't really think of him as an actor we've watched, but... Yeah.
Well, we mostly haven't, that's the thing.
Yeah, that's the thing, yes. Yeah, fair point.
John Huston we've talked about, I think. I suspect we all watch more John Huston.
I hope so, definitely.
Carter Burwell, whom I suspect you haven't heard of.
No.
Composer on Blood Simple and Fargo and The Big Lebowski and 3 Billboards and No Country for Old Men.
Wow. Okay.
So
well,
a lot with the Coens and a bit with other people as well.
I didn't notice any of those soundtracks, which is a good thing. That reminds me, we did Lawrence of Arabia recently. We didn't mention the soundtrack once during the episode, but never mind.
It's one of those. Here is a repeated motif that is going to drive you mad. But apart from that, it works quite well for me.
Yeah, I knew the motif, but I didn't expect it to be used quite so much for the whole film.
At least it's not the last goodbye. Talking of which, Talking of which, John Williams turns up as a composer in 5 films as well, but the other four, he did a better job.
Where's Nicolas Cage in all this?
We hadn't done them. I mean, we did Pig and we did Colour Out of Space,
and we did Renfield.
True, but hasn't quite made the cut-off on this.
Oh my goodness. Well, we need to rectify that.
Andrew Stanton gets in here because he wrote on all the Toy Story films and Lightyear.
Oh, he wrote Lightyear as well.
Which strikes me as very strange, because my feeling while watching it was, you guys are completely missing the point of Toy Story. But
yeah, I am really surprised, because that is it's a below average animated film.
And the other guy who turns up as a five-timer is Dean Cundey as a cinematographer, because he did all three Back to the Futures, as well as Halloween and The Fog.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, that is interesting. I would love to have more about, yes, how often Bill Paxton's popped up in the background. But short of manually entering every single actor from every single film, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I have a copy of the old IMDb data set, but obviously anything later than 2017 or thereabouts won't show up on it, so.
Frustrating.
It's also slightly harder to work with, because they used a bizarre format and then felt they couldn't ever change it.
Because it became too popular, I guess.
Yeah. But, yeah, and just looking through this last year of Revenant of Memes.
Yes, we have our output has slowed down a little bit, largely because my life got busier, but we're still going every other week now instead of every week. But we will maybe get back to weekly at some point.
We'll see how things go, yeah. But, let's see, when was our last retrospective?
I don't remember what episode it was. It was about a year ago. That's when we talked about our personal history in cinema and film.
But just thinking about things we have done lately. Train to Busan, I liked possibly more than it deserved, but I did like it.
I'm not
generally a horror fan, unless there's something else to it. I'm much more interested in the investigation. You know, not just it's a monster. Let us scream and run away. But I much prefer let us try to find out what's going on here.
It was a good one. Yes, Train to Busan. Did we do that this year? Or I can't see it in the.
It
was end of last year. I'm looking over what we've watched this year so far. And the two that stand out at me, actually, the ones that I think probably I enjoyed getting into the most, bizarrely, because I didn't necessarily think so at the time, were the two Gaslight films. I really enjoyed watching both of them, and they were both great in their own ways.
I'm definitely very glad to have seen them, and I had heard, obviously, about it, particularly the second one, but I really liked having seen both of them. That worked well for me in a way that I hadn't necessarily expected.
I was very into that.
Frankly, impressed by Sunset Boulevard than I expected to be.
Oh, yes, so. That's very good. I'd watched it before, and I hadn't been as fascinated by it as I was this time. It's less kind of overtly enjoyable as Double Indemnity, which is just a fantastic film, but it's really good. We should watch more Billy Wilder. We also watched recently our first kind of proper documentary, because the other thing we called documentary was Nomadland, but that was a weird hybrid. But we watched watched Over Thy Machines of Loving Grace, which we both ultimately were irritated by Adam Curtis's polemicizing, but they were very interesting films to watch.
I will say that while accepting that sort of argument is one that actually gets people converted, whereas sitting down and reasoning with somebody doesn't.
Yes. Well, that I think ultimately we both felt it was propaganda.
I guess we could count The Big Short as semi-documentary.
Yes, I called it drama, but I suppose drama document. And I enjoyed that actually more than I thought. I thought it was going to be a slightly flippant, very dumbed down, with a real message. And I suppose it kind of was all those things, but it did it with a charm and a slickness that could have really irritated me, but didn't, actually. I really enjoyed it.
It is perhaps unfortunate. Is it Michael Lewis? Yeah, who's just written a hagiography of Sam Bankman-Fried.
Oh, yeah, I'd like to read that. He also...
I really don't want to read that.
He sounds like a really interesting character.
He's just the guy who grew up knowing perfectly well that he would always be insulated from the consequences of his actions. It's not that he is bad at social graces, it's just he never had to learn any. But yes, he has this magnetism which clearly worked on Lewis. I mean, after Lewis interviewed people for The Big Short, you would think he would be at least proof against that class of confidence trickster. But no.
Well, he has...
he's terribly impressed with Bankman-Fried's big brain energy.
I will reserve judgment until I've read it. Yes, fair point. But Sam Bankman-Fried has come a cropper, it's fair to say. Going back to our genres, our most watched was science fiction. What do you think our highest percentage of masterpieces was?
I think that it's too noisy for me to predict.
Well, let me give you some of the things. We have war, comedy, SF, historical, noir, biopic, coming of age and western.
I suspect noir in particular we're more likely to watch if we think it's going to be good, and we're likely to think of it as good because we both like the style.
Spot on. That is by far and away our highest masterpiece percentage. Up in the 72%, we've watched 11 noirs. I'm slightly surprised at that. War came in pretty close at 69%.
And again, I think we're both in a position where we're not terribly interested in films that go, rah, rah, war is great. And
yes,
films that say war is terrible. I mean, it's not an original thing to say, but it has been said very well on a number of occasions. So
we're more likely to watch that kind of mindset and appreciate it. Our lowest percentages of masterpieces, we've watched 4 coming-of-age films and didn't like any of them. These are masterpieces where we both agreed, because I probably would have called Stand By Me a masterpiece. 2 documentaries, didn't like either of them. A lowest percentage where we watched a significant number of films. Biopic, I haven't included Lawrence of Arabia there, but we've watched 4 of them. We liked one of them.
I think we mentioned this later on, but having watched the film that was made interviewing, lost the name, Johnny Cash's first wife.
Oh, yes, I know who you mean.
The film made interviewing their children, because she was dead by this point.
Oh, yes, we wanted to watch that, didn't we?
I don't think it deserves an episode in its own. I did watch it, and I would recommend it if you can find it. And it's basically, we just saw Walk the Line, which was more or less June's version of the story. And, well, here is what other people who were there at the time felt, which is not the same thing.
Yeah, that's always interesting to get a different perspective. Biopics, we have problems with historical accuracy. We watched 7 animated films. We both agreed that one of them was a masterpiece. we liked all the Toy Stories in various different ways, but we didn't agree on which were comedies. Pretty low percentage. We watched 12 comedies. We agreed that 4 of them were masterpieces.
I will readily accept that some of this is just me. I mean, I don't really do comedy as a thing. I would much rather have the characters trying to do a serious thing and quipping along the way than I would watch. Then I would like to see the comedy comes first.
Yeah, for me, that's why I like the Coens so much. I genuinely find them funny, but they're not first and foremost comedy. And the only one I can think of that we really have watched that is a full-on, flat-out comedy would be Airplane, which we both liked. Other things that I've tagged as comedy...
Well, all right, we watched Robin Hood Men in Tights, but we didn't like it much.
Not for me. I mean, it's just too zany is the word that springs to mind. Diner and Local Hero I tagged as comedies as well as dramas. But they're not—they're not really flat-out comedies. Good Morning Vietnam I tagged as a comedy as well, because I think it was supposed to be.
Well, the Robin Williams bits are definitely comedy.
yes, that's the shtick. Heathers I also tagged as a comedy, despite being one of the most... depressing film. if it wasn't a comedy, it would be awful.
It's not going outside the space of reality. It's not distorting things to make the funny stuff happen much, but
yes,
there are certain people I can still corpse by just saying in a grim tone of voice, mineral water.
Yes, exactly. The only other one I have tagged as pure comedy was Four Lions,
that's fair enough.
which is pretty good.
I mean, it's comedy that's making a serious point as well, but it's doing it by doing good comedy, so yeah.
First and foremost, it was there to make you laugh, which it does a very good job of. Well, that may be enough number crunchy. Oh, another genre we've watched a lot of, horror. We've watched 28 films. We only agreed 9 of them were masterpieces.
Well, I keep saying I'm not a horror fan. That there are things that go into horror that I like, but I regard At the Mountains of Madness as a science fiction story with some incidental horrific elements, not as a horror story. So
I think we both prefer the unexplainable but has an explanation rather than the, oh, this is supernatural, and therefore we don't need to follow the rules.
Though we were saying recently that, well, I've never seen the Blair Witch Project, and probably we ought to at some point.
Yeah. Yes, we should. I agree. We should give it a try. Yeah. But it is one of our most watched genres. The only other one, crime. We've watched 26 of them. 12 of them we agreed were masterpieces.
And where do you draw the line between crime and noir? And sometimes, usually it's both, but
they're generally double tagged, to be honest. LA Confidential's crime, thriller and noir. Thelma and Louise was crime and thriller, I've called it. I think it's more of a drama. Goodfellas was crime, thriller and drama. So there's some muddiness with these. The pure crime ones, Satan Met a Lady, which we did not agree was a masterpiece. Well, we agreed it wasn't a masterpiece.
Yeah, Bette Davis.
Yes, yeah, but Bette Davis aside. City of God was pure crime.
Mm.
A Simple Plan, I called pure crime. You could call it crime and thriller, probably.
This is why I don't tend to dual tag things with drama, because everything is something in drama.
Yeah, that's a fair. Yeah, all the others were some combination of it. Traffic was crime and drama. Mulholland Drive, oh no, that was drama. That, I think, Mulholland Drive is probably my least favourite film on this whole list.
I didn't love it, but I'm afraid I'll still put Stand By Me lower. I just, there
it
is
did not work for you.
There is clearly that whole, I guess you could call it a genre, that whole set of tropes of American boyhood, up brackets idealized.
Yes.
And it just has nothing to say to me. So
that's fair. I'm going to let you have it. I'm saddened in my heart, but I'll let you have it.
I'm not saying it. I think less of anybody else for enjoying it. I've read some books which, oh boy, if anybody says they love this book, I will stay quite well away from them. But no, I mean, I think it's fair enough. I just, the annoyingness of the kids wasn't for me compensated by that particular aspect.
Fair enough. As a final thing, looking over this whole list of all these films we've watched, what film would I quite happily watch right after we finish recording?
Aliens.
there's three for me. Aliens is one of them. Jaws and The Man Who Would Be King, which I guess I felt right at the start of this whole process, which means basically nothing has changed. But it's good that in the sense that I feel like we are broader in our filmic knowledge. We're more educated. Mm. We've enjoyed a lot of things, but I don't feel like we've massively missed out.
Well,
not watching.
I am still much more a reader than a film watcher.
Yes.
But this happened to start with, but it's been continuing that I have grown to appreciate a film that, well, maybe the character and the story are a bit lacking, but it is visually gorgeous and it will hold my attention for that. And this is not just a whiz-bang action. This can be Paris, Texas.
Yeah, that's held a place in my brain longer than I thought it would. I wouldn't be in a hurry to watch it again.
But, maybe the first bit. I mean, as I said at the time, I would watch that man walking across the desert all day.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd probably die, but
yeah. Well, you could watch him rot as well after a bit. I agree. I'm glad to have watched it. There's some really classic films that I should have watched before that I'm very glad I watched now, like Nosferatu, like Battleship Potemkin, I should say.
I'm glad to have watched Magnolia. It was Weird, yeah. But yeah. There were things I liked about it.
So. I wonder if we should watch some more Paul Thomas Anderson. I have wondered about suggesting Boogie Nights at some point, which I think I'd like to see. I think the main thing missing from this list is more Nicolas Cage. And we should do that more. He's a very good screen presence. Just thinking of him in Pig and then in Renfield and then in The Colour Out of Space. He's got a broad range when he's not doing his full on, I'm Nicolas Cage, which he's largely doing in Renfield, to be fair. But
but he's doing it. In Renfield, he's doing it, but he's got it completely under control.
Yes, that's a fair point. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Love to have seen the film that was focused on him and Shiri Agdashlu.
Oh, yeah.
The grown-ups in the film.
Yes, exactly. That would have been a better film. Well, there we are. That is 3 years of Riven of Memes, 187 films. So far.
Is this where we say we've got great and exciting changes coming and it turns out we've been bought out by Facebook or something?
yes. Our data is now available at a premium cost.
I think, to be fair, we're planning to keep on doing more or less the same thing.
I think so, yes. Any requests for particular films? We have, on occasion, taken requests. We've got no shortage of films we want to watch, but if there's anyone listening would particularly want us to be mean about, which I'm afraid happened with 13th Warrior. But
also particularly anything that you think is or should be regarded as a masterpiece that we haven't touched.
Yes. I mean, there are some we'll admit we haven't touched just because we feel there's not a lot more to say. We were close to that with Citizen Kane. Blade Runner is our classic one that just been overanalyzed.
Star Wars, for that matter.
Yeah, Star Wars just feels like they've become more than just films on their own. And I frankly don't think I could sit and watch Star Wars with a critical eye, partially because I know it like the back of my hand, and I frankly, because of that, find it a bit boring to watch now. I should probably watch it at some point again.
As I mentioned before, if I do watch it again, I'll find it very hard to restrain myself from shouting, Prince Faisal!
That's a name I've not heard in a long time, since 1962. Right, well, there we are. Thank you for listening this far, and we shall do more of these in the future.
Ribbon of Memes shall return.
Bye.